This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. In a recent story for Great Lakes Echo, commentator Gary Wilson reports on citizens battling large companies over clean air and water. But he says they have few allies in government, and Wilson says help can even be hard to find among environmental groups because, as the title of his story says, environmental justice is no one's priority. Gary Wilson, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, Gordon. Always good to be with you.
Tell us, what made you want to write this piece? What made you want to focus on environmental justice?
Well, environmental justice, Gordon, has always been a priority for me, and I have to confess, I can be, you know, one of those people where environmental justice is not a priority, even though I have an interest in it. There are just so many other issues that many times take precedent. But last month, I spent 2 days in the southern part of Chicago and northwest Indiana, heavily industrialized areas. The BP Whiting refinery is there, and it's just been the nexus of a number of environmental justice issues, environmental issues in general, and environmental justice issues with the expansion of the refinery and storage of petroleum coke. So I had the opportunity to spend 2 days down there with a not-for-profit organization, the Institute for Journalism and the Natural Resources, who took a number of reporters down there, and we toured all the facilities and talked to a number of people over the course of the days. And when you're there on site, the environmental issues and the environmental issues just jump off of the page for you. It was very enlightening, and that prompted me to get off my rear end and write something about it, which was long overdue.
Well, as you went around trying to talk to people about environmental justice, it seemed as though there's some different definitions out there of what it exactly means. How do you define it?
Well, I'll tell you how the U.S. EPA defines it, because they have a formal, they have a page on their website or pages about environmental justice. And they describe it as, and I'm quoting now, the fair treatment and involvement of all people with respect to the development, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws and regulations and policies. In a more practically, I think environmental justice focuses on the realization that, you know, there's a disproportionate number of polluting industries, such as power plants and refineries, like we're located in northwest Indiana, that are located in or near low-income and minority communities. What environmental justice seeks to do is make sure that there's a fair distribution of environmental burdens, you know, amongst all people, regardless of their background. That's the definition that I like to work off of.
As you say, it's not always your priority, but why do you believe, after talking to many people who are in the environmental movement, that it's no one's priority?
Environmental movement is, you know, I know many of the groups, especially if they're related to the Great Lakes issues, and here in Chicago, we have the Natural Resources Defense Council, which has a Midwest office, and they're focused on many issues, more than just Great Lakes issues. And when it comes to environmental justice, you know, everybody has an agenda of what they need to do. And environmental justice never seems to make it to the top, and sometimes it's for understandable reasons. Environmental groups have to please their funders. They have to be able to produce results. And when you get into environmental justice battles, it's hard to produce measurable results and to do them in a short period of time. You know, everybody's got tight timelines for things that they have to accomplish. Environmental justice issues play out over a long period of time. Grassroots organizations in the communities are up against, you know, big companies, British Petroleum, for example, in Whiting, Indiana. But British Petroleum has a lot of resources that it can bring to bear, and those are long fights that take a lot of time. So when environmental groups started looking at what they have to do, you know, many of them are very well-intentioned. You know, I'd like to take on environmental issues, justice issues, but, you know, can I really do that and accomplish what else I need to accomplish? That's the issue.
I want to read from part of your piece here about the Army Corps of Engineers Chicago District. You say that it's spending $2.8 million of Great Lakes restoration money to create an ecotourism site for the Chicago Park District on Northerly Island, which is a peninsula in Chicago's prestigious museum campus, also home to a revenue-generating rock concert venue. It's a stretch, you say, to justify spending scarce restoration money on a site that the Park District has said is already dedicated to nature. And the Corps just completed a multi-million-dollar beach restoration project in partnership with the city of Highland Park. On Chicago's elite North Shore, Highland Park is one of the wealthiest communities in Illinois. It's the summer home for the Chicago Symphony, not Petcoke Storage. I'm wondering if someone would read those paragraphs and perhaps reach a conclusion that some people have about, you know, maybe the stereotypical environmental movement, that it's really about kind of wealthy elitists as opposed to grassroots organizing.
It's always the burden that environmental groups have to carry. When especially the Northerly Island project, when you look at that, it just kind of jumps off of the page about access. Northerly Island was an airport, and Mayor Daley tore that up about 10 years or so ago, and he wanted to turn it into a nature area, and good for him. Needed money, and as things evolved over time, they put in this rock concert venue there to generate revenue for the island. Along comes the Army Corps of Engineers working in concert with the Park District, and they kind of know the ins and outs of how Great Lakes Restoration funding works, and they were able to conjure up a project to restore part of the island, and the other part is devoted to the rock concert venue. I just think that jumps off the page as inappropriate use of money by people who know how to work the system. Why not let the city of Chicago pay for that itself, either through taxes or through revenue from the concert venue? That's kind of gets at the heart of environmental justice for me. When people who could be classified as elitist, they know how to work the system. You know, I guess there's nothing wrong with that, but they have all the advantages, and I just think that $2.8 million, could have been better used someplace else. I know it's an apples to oranges comparison, but it illustrates the benefits of having access and inside information.
Does it go back, though, to your previous point about being able to show results, that this is the sort of project that you can work on, you won't run into the resistance and perhaps the red tape that a BP may throw in your way to try and deal with an issue in Indiana. And at the end of the day, you can go back to your funders and your supporters and say, look what we did. In this spot, look at our restoration project, our ecotourism site.
You're exactly right, Gordon. I couldn't have said it any better. There's a project. It was defined when the Army Corps wrote the description of it. It was couched in restoring part of the island to a natural habitat. They put in some of these ecotourism things. But it was classic. Here's the issue. Here's what the money will be used for. This will be the result. This is how long it'll take. And these will be the benefits. That's hard to achieve in an area like Whiting, Indiana, that's got Petcoke storage issues there with it blowing through the neighborhood. There's BP on one side of the border producing the petroleum coke, the Petcoke. On the other side of the border in Chicago is the Koch brothers, the famous conservative brothers who fund a lot of political issues. It's their storage company, and those people just don't have the resources that other people do to deal with those issues. And in the end of the day, environmental groups go there, reporters go there, but they don't live there, and the people who have to deal with the issues are living there every day of the year.
Now, as you say, you do have some criticism for environmental groups which have not made environmental justice a priority, but you also say that you do believe that they care about the issue. What are the things, perhaps external sort of events, that get in the way of them pursuing an environmental justice initiative as opposed to something else?
One of the things that became very evident, or was confirmed to me, I sort of knew it, but it was definitely confirmed to me, that the big environmental groups, in this case, the Natural Resources Defense Council, the Alliance for the Great Lakes here in Chicago, when they go into a local community, there's always a suspicion about what they really want to do sufficient on the part of the locals, the grassroots activists in the communities. There's basic mistrust there. And it comes down to big environmental groups have a penchant for negotiating behind the scenes with the local regulators and with a company like BP, and they come up with the result. And the locals feel left out. They are left out of that process many times. That means they're working at cross purposes. And that trust barrier is hard to bridge. Now, it doesn't mean that it can't be done, but there's not a natural affinity for local people to want to work with the big environmental groups because they feel at the end of the day they could still be on the short end of the stick.
You also write that some people in these disadvantaged communities can be uncompromising, which is certainly understandable why someone doesn't want to compromise about the air and water quality in their backyard. But as you say, at the end of the day, the end result may not be good for the people who are trying to affect change.
Right. There are just certain issues that, a lot of these issues are steeped in the law, environmental regulations. I want to come back to BP. It seems like I'm picking on them, but they're there in Whiting, and they've got this huge refinery. By the way, they declined to talk to the reporters there. But, they would say, we follow the law, and if there are regulations, we follow them. Now, they have all the resources, all the technical expertise, all the lawyers. They've got tremendous amount of access to regulators and politicians and agencies. So their voice is always heard. And there's only so much that can be accomplished sometime. And the local people, they're focused on what's right. And I would be, too, if I were them. But they don't necessarily have the expertise and the nuance of how the process works and what the law is and how hard it is to change things. So sometimes they're going for a total victory when the reality is they really don't have a chance for that, and they ought to be focused on something that can be accomplished in a smaller increment and live to fight another day. That's part of the issue there.
You say that more political will and courage is needed to make environmental justice a priority. What do you think could be a spark that might lead to groups finding more political courage and will?
I think the issue of the tar sands oil production with the Keystone Pipeline and everything that's happening in Alberta, Canada, and in the Dakotas and the United States, there's hardly a day goes by, Gordon, that the tar sands oil isn't in the news somehow. This whole petcoke storage issue started in Detroit on the banks of the Detroit River a few years ago when residents there in the neighborhood, but across the river in Canada, the people started noticing that the particulate matter from the petroleum coke was blowing through their neighborhoods and across the river into Canada. The petcoke is a byproduct of the tar sands oil production, and it's located in the neighborhoods. That was a spark and continues to be a spark. Now, the citizens in Detroit were able to get it out of their neighborhood. It's still here on the south side of Chicago. And because it's so connected with the tar sands oil, which is so controversial, that has provided that spark that has kept it in the news and has given the activists some ammunition, and it's helping them get attention to their cause.
Gary Wilson, as always, thank you for your time.
Always good to be with you, Gordon. Thank you.
Commentator Gary Wilson's essay called Environmental Justice, No One's Priority, is available at Great Lakes Echo and also through a link at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.